This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
The election this week is going to be, quote, an election of the caravan. That's according to the President of the United States. Donald Trump has talked about the migrant caravan that's now in Mexico relentlessly, unceasingly. He's trying to whip up as much fear as he can on the eve of the midterm elections. He's described it as an invading army with potential terrorists and criminals in their midst. The reality of the caravan is something entirely different, and one of our reporters is on the ground to describe it. The New Yorker's Jonathan Blitzer spent a week reporting on the caravan, walking alongside them, and talking all day long with the thousands of people who have been heading north. I reached Jonathan Blitzer in Mexico. John, you've spent a week embedded in the migrant caravan, as it's been called, traveling from Honduras north toward the border between Mexico and Texas, although that's a long way away. Where did you join up? How far into the journey has it been? And how many people were along?
By the time I joined the group, they had been traveling for a few weeks. I met them in southern Mexico in the state of Chiapas as they were in a small city of about maybe 50,000 residents called Mapastepec. And by then, the group had pretty much been steady at a little over 5,000 people. And what they'd been doing is they'd been kind of skirting the western edge of the state of Chiapas, moving north bit by bit, walking about 25 to 30 miles a day.
How many hours a day is that?
Yeah, I mean, they start early. They start before the sun is up. So they started around 4 in the morning, sometimes even earlier, because it's so hot. And once the sun comes up by 8 in the morning, it's 90, 95 degrees, and they're walking along a highway, and so the heat really builds because the concrete, or the pavement rather. And so, you start to see people arrive in the next destination as early as midday and then kind of trickling in through the evening before they start the next trip for the next city.
Well, what are the logistics of things? In other words, how do people eat and get water and charge their phones? It must be immensely complicated.
It is, and it's kind of an amazing thing to behold. I think roughly, I mean, just in terms of the basics, the water, food, the caravan members are entirely dependent, really, on communities along the route, making donations. There's kind of a weird patchwork of relief agencies and groups that are traveling along with them. People bring food to the town square. There's medical attention that some of the migrants can get through this network of relief agencies. And so what they do is when they arrive in a place, there's kind of the city, wherever it is, becomes almost a refugee camp, a kind of a refugee camp for basically 24 hours.
Well, where are they sleeping?
They're sleeping on the street. Sometimes they're sleeping inside, but for the most part, it's outside in parks. It's just on the street. It's in fields along the route. Some of them sleep along the side of the road. It's that striking.
Now, John, I think we want to know, above all, where these people are from, what they want, and what is the common story that you keep hearing?
The vast majority of people on the caravan, if not nearly all of them, are from Honduras. And the story you hear to a person is that life in Honduras is just no longer sustainable. There's no work. The cities and communities across Honduras are incredibly violent and dangerous. Most of the people I've been talking to have tried pretty much everything they could think of. They've tried changing their jobs. They've tried moving to different places within the country. And so there's a real sense of desperation among pretty much everyone who's undertaking this trip. I don't know how fixated everyone is on the U.S. People are really so desperate just to get on the move that they haven't even all considered what the U.S. looks like, what the border policy would involve, kind of whether or not they could go through the full asylum process.
And so we've heard numbers like 5,000 too. Is that number growing larger or getting smaller over time?
I think that number is roughly consistent. The group is thinning a little bit. Increasingly what people are doing is they are trying to hitch rides. In some cases, church groups have arranged van and truck transport. And so it's a little bit more diffuse than it initially was, but there is still a basic kind of core logic to the way the caravan advances. The idea is that if you can't get too far ahead of the caravan, because then you lose all of the benefits of traveling with this large of a group.
Why are they traveling in such a big group? What's the purpose of a caravan as opposed to 25 people traveling together and hitching rides or however they would do it?
Well, really, the caravan gives them protection. And the whole point of the caravan, it's funny, when we look at the caravan from the U.S. side, it looks like this overtly political act, a kind of symbolic act, a collective stand against the authorities along the way. Really what it is a tool to get through Mexico. The route itself through Mexico is extremely dangerous. There are armed groups, there are gangs, there are criminals who kidnap you, extort you, beat you, brutalize you. I mean, these are all very real risks. And on top of that, Mexican immigration authorities are actually in Central America famously brutal for how they deal with Central American migrants. Mexico has deported more Central Americans back home than the U.S. has over the last several years. And so the idea by traveling in this group, you kind of inure yourself against Mexican authorities just converging on the group, arresting everyone and deporting them. It's too hard for the Mexican government to deal with a group this large. Once the group, if the group can eventually hit the U.S., and that's uncertain, and that's many weeks away at a minimum, the idea of the caravan no longer has the same utility. Then people will kind of disperse and make their particular asylum claims or sort of try to cross as they can.
John, you're not alone there as a journalist. There must be some awareness that people in the United States are watching this, that this is the focus of attention, particularly on right-wing media, and Donald Trump has been calling it an invasion. Invasion is the word that has become the talking point for the Republican right about this. Do people talk about this in the caravan?
The people I'm talking to, people are very aware of how aggressive Trump is on this subject, but I don't think they have much of a sense at all of the midterm context of how the right in the U.S. is kind of using this as a rallying cry.
So they're not aware of the election coming in a matter of days.
Correct, and of course, you know, in some ways, why would they be? Because they're not going to arrive at the U.S. border for several weeks still. The midterms will be over by the time some of these people arrive at the U.S. border.
So when Trump tweets that criminals and unknown Middle Easterners are mixed in with the Hondurans in the caravan, it seems like a code for terrorists and lots of rhetoric about bad people, to use his phrase. Are there any signs of this in the group?
None at all. None at all.
I mean, is anyone armed?
No one that I've seen, no one that I've heard about. You know, the group, there are little, as you can imagine, there are tensions and fissures within the group. They've been traveling for weeks. They've been doing this grueling journey. There are rumors sometimes that circulate within the group that, you know, while I was in one of these towns in the southern tip of Oaxaca, there were rumors that someone was stealing babies, and everyone in the camp panicked and looked for this culprit. And in fact, within hours, it turned out that, okay, nothing had happened. But that's really the extent of it. I mean, there's nothing at all aggressive or violent or dangerous about this group. You're seeing children, you're seeing mothers, you're seeing fathers, you're seeing people who are making this grueling 30-mile-a-day trip in Crocs, in sandals, in flip-flops. It is a thoroughly unintimidating group of people.
So when they start hearing about thousands of troops being sent by Trump to the border, what's the reaction?
I think for the most part, people expect the U.S. border to be hard to cross. But I don't even think that that's an immediate concern of theirs quite yet. In some ways, the more immediate political concern for them is what's happening in Mexico. And this is something that's frequently been overlooked in the context of the caravan. In early December, a new president will take over in Mexico, and he's Andrés Manuel López Obrador. And he's thought to be sort of much more sympathetic to the plight of migrants, at least compared to his predecessor. And there's some uncertainty within the group about what will happen come December 1st when Mexican leadership changes. This is a president who said he'd stand up to Trump, who very much wants to be seen as a man of the people. I mean, the Mexican government is actually between a rock and a hard place here. I mean, you have Trump breathing down their necks to stop this entire caravan in its tracks. The Mexican government can't exactly do that. It also has partners, obviously, in the region, and so it can't be seen as being too brutal with this caravan as it moves north.
John, last week, of course, Robert Bowers broke into a synagogue in Pittsburgh and killed 11 people, wounded more. And his message on social media was a hysteria about what he called invaders, a word that we're now hearing on Fox News all the time, a word that we hear from the president. Invaders, in his words, that come in to kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered, is what Bowers wrote. He talked about massive human caravans invading America as the motivation for his fury and eventually his murderous rampage in the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. And I wonder, as you were making this trek alongside these migrants, how you process this reality of what's happening.
I mean, just from a personal standpoint, I really needed to compartmentalize, because to see news like that, tragic news, to hear the president continue even after that massacre to sort of gin up the base about this totally unfounded fear of the border being overrun. It's so plainly at odds with what's happening here on the ground that it's too overwhelming even to try to take stock of. You know, here on the ground, they're worlds apart. I mean, the people marching north are in a state of exhaustion, desperation, almost unfathomable uncertainty, and the U.S. remains to many of them an abstraction. What isn't abstract to them is, you know, the blisters on their feet, their thirst, their uncertainty about where they'll sleep at night. But the thing that was probably for me most striking about it was that around the time, basically a day after the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, the caravan itself, about 5,000 people strong, arrives in southern Oaxaca and is preparing to advance to a tiny village, and this is where we were based, called Santiago Niltepec, population 4,000. So smaller population than the caravan itself. And, you know, I'm listening to the rhetoric in the U.S., the president sending troops to the border, telling voters across the country that we're about to be wiped out because this band of marauders is advancing on our border. And here, I'm in a small town where there are actually more migrants arriving than there are residents. And it was kind of this amazing moment of parallel universes. And you just watched as a community dealt with this incredibly complex and intractable thing, the arrival of 5,000 people. And they felt a fear and a desire to kind of recoil from the migrants as they arrived. At the same time, they felt a moral responsibility to help. And over the 24-hour period that the caravan was in this tiny town of Santiago Niltepec, you watched the community in a really organic and kind of soulful way deal with this insane situation. It really devastated me to see. So that was kind of the landscape for us as we were taking in that news.
Eventually, these people will reach the border, presumably. What would be a humane, a sane, and pragmatic way to deal with them when they do reach the border?
I mean, most of these people who do reach the border, and to be clear, you know, of the 5,000 people in this caravan, it's not at all certain that all of them, or nearly all of them, or for that matter, half of them, will reach the border. Past caravans that have been more than 1,000 people large who have tried to advance to the U.S. typically have only a few hundred arrive at the U.S. border seeking asylum. But in any case, when members of this caravan do arrive at the U.S. border, probably later in November, there is an asylum process in place at the border. And those who have claims of credible fear of being persecuted in their home countries will and should, by law, by international and U.S. law, have the right to present those claims to immigration agents at the border and to have U.S. authorities weigh those claims. The problem is, of course, that I'm not even confident that those who have legitimate claims of asylum will have the opportunity to pursue it in the U.S. But the humane response for the U.S. government is to follow international law and to give those seeking refuge in the U.S. a chance to make their claim and at least let the cards fall.
Jonathan Blitzer is speaking to us from Mexico. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks, David.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.